Hello and welcome to the WeChat Tech podcast. We are here live today with Romano Roth. Romano has had an illustrious career for the past 23 years. He's been at Zilke Group during that time. He's the global chief of DevOps. He's a thought leader, a coach, a trainer, a speaker, a lecturer, and the organizer of DevOps Days Zurich. So yes, welcome Romano.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you again. It's been a while since we caught up, so good to see you. I think with these podcasts, Romano, what I want to cover is obviously your whole journey from sort of start to where you are now. And I think that journey always starts with the question, you know, what is DevOps to you?
That's always a question that many people are asking me. And for me, DevOps is all about bringing all the people, all the process and the technology together to continuously deliver value. That is sort of what I'm always saying. For me, DevOps is not only bringing development and operation together. It is about bringing all the people together which are working on a product, not on a project, on a product. So they build a value stream. And for me, DevOps starts right where you have your first idea until the very end when it goes to the customer. But it does not end there because you always need to monitor, to evaluate things and to get the feedback back to the development team and also to the business team. So I have a very holistic view on DevOps. And for me, DevOps is really all about that continuous deliver of value in a whole value stream.
Fantastic. Wow, it's a good high-level overview of exactly what DevOps is, I suppose, in that respect. In terms of from a consultancy, Romano, does that typically differ the term DevOps to being in a consultancy and working for like a product-based business, or what do you think?
Sometimes it differs a little bit because it always depends a little bit, especially when you are a consultant, you have different contexts. And DevOps means different things in different contexts. So that's one of the things you can see. And also in terms of maturity. For example, when you are going in as a consultant to a company, you always need to have a look at how they understand DevOps, first of all, and also what is their maturity in doing DevOps. There are companies out there which are absolutely doing an amazing job when it comes to DevOps. They have value stream organizations. They are very good when it comes to technical maturity. And also when it comes to the whole continuous value delivery. So they are awesome. And then there are companies where you literally need to start at the point where you say, hey, guys, we should not use the file system for our version control of the code. We should go with, for example, Git. And you can see there is a huge spread in there when it comes to consultancy. Of course, when you look at different companies, they always start at a different point. And again, there you have companies, especially larger companies or companies from United States or from Singapore, which are quite far when it comes to DevOps maturity. They even go now into the direction of platform engineering. They have their own platforms already. And of course, there are also companies which are far behind, which still have a waterfall processes in place and which are not that agile, but want to go into this direction. So yes, it differs massively.
So every company obviously is at different points in their DevOps lifecycle or journey, and it's about sort of levitating that and using that to sort of give different outcomes depending on the client, I guess, from your point of view as well, as a leader in the space. What inspired you, Romano, to get into DevOps?
Yeah. So my inspiration to DevOps started quite early, and it was more because I'm very lazy. And during my career, when I programmed things, one of the things I needed to do is verify if my code works. So I created my very first tests. But executing all the time these tests manually was not a very good thing. So when I built it for my own, my first script, so my first CI/CD pipeline to just compile and install one of my application. After that, CI/CD pipelines were coming up, like the Team Foundation server, and so I jumped right on top of that and was building my first CI/CD pipelines with that. But what really hooked me up is when I was in a project where people were massively suffering because we had bad software engineering practices. We had no CI/CD pipeline. The development environment was really, really bad. And one of my colleagues even got a burnout during that time working for that client and in that project. And that was sort of the turning point where I for myself said, hey, my mission is to help these companies and also the developers having an environment which is awesome to work in, where they can continuously deliver value and where they don't need to suffer from a bad workspace, so to say.
So how do you go about implementing the right automation tooling to then obviously decreasing burnout? How does that all work from your end as a leader?
Yeah, what I usually do is I go in and what I do is I do a value stream mapping. So all of the projects and let's say all of the product development, this is always a value stream, which goes from you have an idea or the business has an idea until to deploy into production and doing all the monitoring. So this is a value stream. And with value stream mapping, which is a very easy to do technique. You just bring all the people into a room. You need to have plenty of space in that room because you take some post-its and you ask the people to line up all of the steps that are needed to bring an idea into production. And you just go and say, okay, first of all, we need to gather the requirements, then perhaps the coding, testing, deployment, and so on. And you have all of these steps. Usually what happens then is that the people are saying, whoa, that many steps, but that's not all. Then you go and say, okay, who is in charge for that step? And you add another bunch of post-its, who is in charge, for example, the PO, or the testing team, and so on. Now you see where you have handoffs, which is quite interesting because a handoff is something that is expensive. It and also gets some tension. And then after that, you go and say, okay, now we are going to measure. We are going to measure the lead time, the process time, and the percentage complete and accuracy. The lead time is the time from one step until the very end of the step. And the process time is the time where you are really doing value-added work. And the percentage complete and accuracy is how complete is the output of that step. So the quality of it. And when you have all of that, then you see very, very clearly where your bottlenecks are. Because there where you have a huge difference between lead time and process time, there you have a lot of waiting time. And where the percentage complete and accuracy is very, very low, there you have a low quality in that. And from that, when you have that current value stream, you can imagine a future value stream. And out of that, you can create a set of action points to go into this direction of that new value stream. And this is a sort of how I go into the projects and go and steer them into the right direction so that they can continuously improve, because there is no clear set. And as we discussed it also in the beginning, every context is different and every maturity is different. And with that, you get that maturity out and you can identify where the problem points are.
Wow, fantastic. So when it comes to obviously starting at that post-it notes bit where everyone's in the room and given their ideas, is there typically a big difference between a developer's viewpoint and a DevOps engineer's viewpoint? And how does that operate as you being the sort of, you know, the sort of guy in between those two teams?
Yeah, there is always a lot of difference. Usually the huge difference is between the business or management and the development team and the people who are operating it. Because usually what happens is the developers are saying, this is what happens before I get the Jira ticket and need to develop something. I didn't know that all of that happens. And usually, I did that value stream mapping hundreds of time. And usually what you can see is 1/3 of the time is spent at the beginning until the developer really gets it. And that's usually a huge number. And also the managers are quite, they all also say, oh, wow, that so much time is in there. And the other point is the management or the business is saying, oh, okay, that's what you need to do when we give you the task to implement something. And this is always quite interesting. And also when you look at the operation side, usually the people are also, this is what needs to be done before we sort of need to operate stuff. And the funny thing is, when you bring these people all together and suddenly you have the whole overview about the whole value stream, very interesting things are happening. It's an eye-opener for them. They suddenly see the whole value stream. And this is part of system thinking, whole system thinking. And you see they are thinking about new ways how they can improve that value stream. And When you are doing then the future value stream, you can clearly see that they are not improving only a tiny little bit, which could cause stress on either side. They are really improving the whole value stream. And that's the big benefit out of value stream mapping.
So is that linked to, Romano, sort of implementing a big cultural shift in the way that developers think as well, to have that sort of, you know, that DevOps mindset moving forward and seeing the benefits of doing that?
Absolutely. Because suddenly what you see is all the people understand the whole value stream. They start not to think in their silo. They start to think in the whole stream. And this is a first important step in the direction of a one-team approach, collaborative ownership, and also cross-functional team, because only when you understand the whole value stream and how you are building the product, then you can start to begin to be a team. And also then you get that cultural shift, which is needed in there. But of course, you also need to do other things. But whole system thinking is sort of like the fundamental understanding of your value stream. That's a very essential point in there.
Wow. And if new people join the organization, Romano, how does that affect the overall culture within the team you've built over the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years of adopting that mindset? How does that change when somebody new joins the team?
Yeah, the interesting thing is, as soon as you have such a picture of your current value stream, where you are at the moment, and your future value stream, it is very good for the people, because they have a visualization of the current value stream and also of where they are heading. So you always have, okay, this is our North Star. We are going into this direction. So everybody is moving into the right direction. And you also know where you are and where your problems are. And you also know who is sort of working on which problem. And this gives the people the freedom that we are moving all in the same direction, and also we are working on the problems. And in the end, this also reduces the stress on the people, and it also avoids burnouts.
Fair play. Fantastic. Romano, question for you. In terms of the, you know, you've been at Zolke Group for 22 and a half-ish years now, so a long, long time, nearly as old as me. I've been alive for, so a lot, quite a long time. In terms of your motivation to continue to deliver to clients on a yearly, monthly, weekly basis, does that ever change? You know, how do you keep, you know, motivating yourself and your team to continuously deliver results every single year for 23 years?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, it's sort of a passion to do that, because when you are implementing awesome software and you are solving a client's problem, the look in their eyes when they suddenly see that you just solved the problem where they took their head around for months or even for years is just awesome. And again, also when you see a product which is then going to the market, This gives you back a lot of things. And this is just the awesomeness of solving complex problem for our customers and creating these awesome products. This is an awesome thing, and I don't think that ever stops. And also you learn quite a lot of things, and the learning never stops. So it's really a learning journey, and it never gets boring. And I think that's why I continue what I'm doing, because I'm sort of intrinsically motivated to do that.
Wow, fair play. I think a lot of people wouldn't stay in one place for that long and still be excited every day and wanted to make a difference. So congratulations on that anyway. In terms of on that topic as well, Romano, when it comes to your position at Zolke Group, how has your role changed over time? You know, how has that journey been for you from the start when you first joined as a young man to now where you are, as an experienced man that's been through different sort of pathways to get to your present time, I suppose?
Yeah. I mean, The awesome thing about Zolke is you join sort of as a junior, and usually you then join a project where you have senior people in there, and it's really awesome how they are coaching and mentoring you during that time when you are starting directly from university, because you sort of need to learn a little bit different how to implement stuff in the real world, because until then you just have done some educational stuff which is not how you are doing things when you have a real project. And this mentoring and this coaching from these senior engineers is very, very beneficial, and you learn quite a lot in a very short time, and that's really awesome. And then what you see is you are growing through your career, and at Zolke, education is really, really an important thing. So our people are spending roughly 10 to 20 days every year doing education during the whole year, and this is a very important part of Zolke and also of our package that our people get educated and get better and better. And during that whole journey, what I saw is that I was always mentored, that I was always coached, that I could do the education that I needed during that time. And everything sort of that I am at the moment is sort of thank to coaching, mentoring, and also the education that I got at Zülke. And this is also why I'm still here, because of these awesome people that are working within Zülke and this great education that I got from Zülke, which led me to that position where I am now.
Wow. So what do you think then, away from just, you know, mentoring and educating your team members, Romano, what else do you think makes a great leader? What attributes do you have to have?
What is very important is that you have quite a set of social skills, which means you need to be good at communicating, but you need to be also empathic. And you also need to have, I always call it a leadership skill. So with leadership, I don't mean that management skill. I mean that you are able to see a person, that you see the strengths, but you also see the weaknesses, and that you can coach or mentor. It always depends a little bit what the person exactly needs. And sort of this is the leadership skill that you need to have also in our industry to create the necessary support for the different people, and also this empathy to think into the people and also look what they need at the moment from you so that they can really grow.
In terms of sort of how you enable your team to grow, Romano, is it a case of you're very much hands-on in terms of you're showing them the tooling to use and how to use it? For example, if you're trying to do a project where you're building a whole new Kubernetes cluster from scratch, are you then sort of showing them how to do it from a hands-on point of view? Or are you sitting back and sort of, you know, letting your team members do that for you? How does that work from like a hands-on perspective for you?
Nowadays, I'm not so deep into the Kubernetes stuff anymore. But what I usually do is I always encourage the team to come up with their own ideas and also do stuff with them. My point is I always want to do stuff together with them, sort of. Because sometimes they are much faster in things. And this is a very interesting thing for me, because then I can learn together with them new stuff. So to answer your question, what I usually do is I think about what do we need to do? What is the problem? I really try to dive into the problem we want to solve, to the root cause of the problem. And then I try to come up with a potential solution space where we have different potential solutions. But this is something that I always try to find out in the group. And then I try to find out what are the criteria, how we can evaluate the right solution. And then we evaluate together the different solutions. And then we come up with, okay, this is sort of the right solution. And this technique is called the trade-off technique. So the architectural trade-off technique, where you evaluate different solutions versus different criterias and evaluate the right one together with your team. And then you're going to implement that.
When it comes to your role now, when it's more strategy focused, how do you determine success within your team?
So when you look at the strategy, then my role currently is more focused on doing some marketing on the market side, going to some conferences, and also doing podcasts like this one. And on the other side, we of course have the strategy side. And on the strategy side, it is more about what kind of offerings do we need to bring to the market. What do the clients need exactly? What are the problems that we would like to solve? And then also, what kind of educations do our people need? So to answer your question, for me, on the strategy side, what is very, very important is, can we utilize our people? If not, do they have sort of the right education, or do we need to educate them so that we can offer them? Or do we have sort of the wrong offerings on the market, and we need to adapt to that? So the main KPI, which is important for me at Zülke, is the utilization of the people in my praxis.
So the people are really the sort of the most important part of everything at Zülke, and especially within your team, to make the whole DevOps environment what it is.
Absolutely. The people are our biggest asset, and this is really also the thing that I always say, and which makes it very, very pleasant to go to Zülke. We have really absolutely awesome people in here, which are very well educated, which are very nice. It's always very important to have a cultural fit. This is also why we have three-step interview process. So the first one is really all about the cultural fit. Then we have a sort of an interview where we go through who are we, what is sort of our offering. And then the third one is really a three-hour technical deep dive where we find out is it technology-wise a fit, and where in our bands are you fitting the best. And this is how we evaluate our people, and this is also why we have really, really absolutely awesome people here.
I think a lot of people and companies sometimes don't realize how important it is at the interview stage to get the right people first time.
Yeah.
You can waste a lot of money, time, you know, sort of getting through these interviews and hiring the wrong people. So not just for sort of, you know, money-wise when you're working with agencies or even internal talent teams you've put together, is to make sure you're keeping the talent there as well once you place them into the team. And I think hiring the right person in the first place helps with that. So I think that's absolutely a really good point.
Yeah, yeah. And also retaining the talents, this is also a very, very important thing. And what you can do is have awesome projects and also creating awesome stuff together with your clients. And the other thing is also offer them education, show them a sort of a career path, coach them through their career. So if they see that they are advancing in their career and that they getting better and better every day, this is really an absolutely awesome thing you can do to retain your talents.
Fantastic. It's a really good insight, guys, by a very well-respected leader. So take notes on this. What role do you think that AI and machine learning will play in the future of not just DevOps, but I think tech in general?
I think it will play quite a big role, and you can already quite good see that nowadays. And but what I can clearly see, and also together with my people, is that, for example, when you look at coding, yes, it helps, but it helps with boilerplate code. In that very moment where you need to create something new, where you need to develop a new algorithm, where you need to be very, very focused, it does not help yet to do that. So yes, it is sort of supporting you AI, But you always need to watch out what it's exactly doing. The same is true, for example, for AI ops or AI augmented DevOps and all of that. It can help you with, for example, log file analysis, because this is sort of a big data analysis. So in my point of view, AI is just the next level. And when I look back in my career, when I was at the university, we implemented in C, and then we had C++. And then on top of that came Java. And at that time, everybody was like, oh, Java is coming. We don't need that many developers anymore, because now we can more efficiently create applications. Which was, of course, not true, as you can see from history. And now AI is just coming on top of that. And yes, with AI as a tool, as a supporting tool, we can create just more awesome stuff, which is more complicated. But there is also a little bit of a danger with AI, in my opinion. Sometimes what I can see is that people stop thinking. And therefore, one of the key skills that future people need to have is that critical thinking and also problem-solving skill. And this will be very, very important for the future, because, as I always say with AI, shit in, shit out.
Yeah. Do you think AI is a danger to the next generation of developers then? Do you think that could be a negative effect for the future of software engineering in general, with AI being a tool that can maybe create laziness? And
yeah, it is a danger, and there are already studies out there which show that the maintainability of code goes down. Yes, it is dangerous, but I don't think it will be that dangerous. It's just at the moment, there is, like when we introduced object-oriented programming, there was also a danger of getting lazy when it comes to memory management. And we had quite a lot of issues with that until we start to manage that. And what I think will happen is also with AI, yes, people will get lazy, but then they will get better at it, because it will cause some of the problems. And then we will get experts in using this technique. There will be sort of standards. There will be also better models out there. And then we will get better and better at using AI for programming awesome software.
I think AI is being used in every industry possible at the moment. I think it's a really bit, especially within consulting, as you know, even with Zolke, I'm guessing there's a lot of POCs being built from a lot of the big boys in the market, you know, likes of Capgemini, Cognizant, Fujitsu. They're all building these POCs, but is that going to be a case of building an actual product, do you think? Or is it a bit of a fad right now where everyone's getting on board because it's such a big buzzword? Shall we say?
I think it's sort of, as always, it's a little bit both. Of course, right now you see everybody is doing AI. Everywhere you see the label, it includes AI, even if it's absolutely not needed. And sort of that's a little bit of the danger that I see. But for example, we also just created a platform for a bank in Liechtenstein, which is right beside of Switzerland. And in that platform, what we built in is, now we have all of the log files in there. And we thought, we have now these large language models, and there are specialized large language models for log analysis. So we just plugged in one of these large language models, and now the developer can just go and click a button and it analyzes the log files. And in my opinion, this is just an amazing use case. We just display to the developer what the analysis of the large language model is, and the developer can then decide based on that output to do what is necessary with this information. And I think these use cases, they are quite useful. And also the feedback that we got from the developers is, this is absolutely awesome. Thank you very much. This helps us massively in finding problems and analyzing the problems. And I think these use cases are use cases we need to implement always with the direction of supporting the people with large language models and with AI. And I think then we are going into the right direction.
Well, what advice do you have, Romano, for young aspiring engineers, not just DevOps, but engineers, you know, software engineers, DevOps engineers, platform, cloud, whatever you want to call it these days, whatever the buzzword is, what do you, you know, what's the sort of biggest advice you have for those people looking to break into what is a really competitive industry?
The thing is, what you really need to do as a junior is really stay up to head, up to date when it comes to technology, and this also means that you need to spend quite a lot of time researching stuff, learning new things, and in my opinion, what I did during my whole career. I never stopped learning new stuff. And one of the advices that I can give you, one of the things that I did a little bit wrong is I focused in the past quite strongly on one language, which was C# for quite a long time. And I think in that time it was good because there was sort of Java and there was C#. But nowadays, I must say, it would have been more beneficial to switch a sort of to Java and then perhaps also
Golang.
Exactly. Today, in my opinion, you should switch between different languages, and nowadays it's much easier because you have ChatGPT or Copilot or any of these tools to support you doing that. So my advice to them is really sort of learn different technologies and never stop learning.
So basically your advice is to become a polyglot programmer.
Absolutely.
You know what? It's funny because a lot of companies, Romano, they do ask for multiple languages to be learned and to be used in their own platform teams. So I think it's important to have Golang. Things like Python is massively used today in DevOps and software engineering. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Python and Java, they sort of go together a little bit, don't they, as well, on the back end. So I think, yeah, it's very, very good advice. In terms of your next steps, Romano, for you in your career, what's next? You know, you've hit now global chief of DevOps. What's the next step for you to, you know, hit the heights that you want to hit?
it's a very good question. I was also asked about that question, and last time I was really speechless.
Oh, really?
About that question, because it's really a good question, because at the moment I'm right at the point where I want to be. So sort of I reached my goal, and first I thought, whoa, that's quite strange, and should I not have different goals? But then I thought, no, it's quite good to also be at sort of a floor level where you can say, okay, now I'm here where I wanted to be. And now I can sort of also make things up and see, okay, where are we going from this stage here? So, but when you are asking where I want to go, so the next thing I'm currently doing is I'm currently writing my own book. It's The Digital Factory. It's already sort of in a pre-release state on LeanPub. I'm currently working on that. So right now I'm going more into the direction of an author and also a thought leader in that whole area of DevOps.
Where can they buy your book, Romano? When is it going to be released, roughly?
you will be able to buy it on LeanPub. This is sort of the platform, and I'm planning to release it by the end of the year, but
I don't know.
I would say a good estimate is next year in summer.
Lovely. Oh, really? That long?
Yeah.
Another year. Wow. Fair enough. That sounds good. You're keeping everybody in suspense, Romano. That's your plan, isn't it? Make everyone that excited about it and get a million copies sold.
No, it's more like I just wrote quite a lot of pages, and I just wrote on the first chapter, which is sort of the foundation of what I want to talk about. And this is already 150 pages.
Wow.
So okay. It can get big.
So, well, without spoiling any of your book's sort of information, Romano, what are the sort of key pointers within the book? What areas are you trying to cover?
So the key point of the book is sort of how you are building digital products nowadays. So what do you need to do in form of the technical foundation, in form of how you organize yourself, and also the work, the processes, and the governance, sort of really a holistic view on the enterprise. And this is also why I call it the digital factory, because in my opinion, all of the companies want to go into the direction of becoming digital factories in the future. And this is also the title of the book, The Digital Factory.
There we are then.
Or die.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. What a good punchline for the book. There we are. Yeah. There we are then. And your YouTube channel, Romano? Where can I find you on there? What's your name on there for everyone?
It's under Romano Ross. You can find it. It's really simple. And it has now over 250 videos already.
And 2,300 subscribers at time of recording, yeah. Roughly?
Roughly, yeah.
Not bad, is it? I should have called you a full-time YouTuber at the start of the video. That would have helped. But no, it's been great having you on, Romano. Do you have any questions for me at all as the host, I guess?
Perhaps to you, Ben, what are you doing the whole day long?
The whole day, as in today, or?
No, for a living, in your work.
Good question. So I've spent the last 6 years in DevOps and cloud recruitment. So I've worked in sort of small companies, a big corporate entity, and now I've started my own business last June. So we're called Revive IT. So that's my company. We're trying to be a bit different with our approach to recruitment. So it's like almost like a non-sales approach to recruitment, which sounds a bit strange, I guess. But I think sort of it's more community-driven for us. And we've got our own DevOps meetup community as well, called DevOps Society, which this will be on as well. This will be on that page. We've got about 2,000 members on that so far in 8 months, which I'm really proud of. So, wow. Yeah, hopefully, Romano, you can speak at one of our events in person when you're next in London.
I would really love to do that.
That would be good. So, that's what I do. It's a bit of a boring job, but it's fun for me. So that's the main thing. And that's me, I guess. I also play futsal as well. Futsal. Do you know futsal? Or?
No. What's that?
It's an indoor football. It's five-a-side football, but it's a lot of the Portuguese and Brazilians grow up playing when they're younger.
Was that so a small
little ball? Yes, a smaller ball. It's a very technical and tactical game, so it makes you think a bit more than football.
Yeah.
So my co-founder Vitas Jelinskas, you haven't met him yet, but he founded the team about 2 months ago. Cool. So I'm one of his bench players at the moment. I'm on the bench, which I'll take. I'm happy with that. Some very good players. So that's my life at the moment.
Cool.
My awesome. Life. But obviously, yeah, everyone, thanks for listening to us. And it's been a pleasure, Romano, to catch up with you again on the podcast, and be releasing probably around mid-September, just for everybody to know. But obviously, we'll clip some bits up, Romano, and get it on YouTube and stuff, and I'll send you the footage. So, yes.
So, well done. Awesome. Thank you very much for having me here.